Hello, everybody. It's Anthony Trombetta, and welcome to the Better Knows Best podcast. This is episode 2 of a podcast designed around film and television. We get a chance to talk about actors and actresses and directors, writers, producers, movies and television and everything in between. As you know, it's a format for me to showcase my opinions and knowledge over the years of accumulation of, you know, readings and screenings and, you know, these reviews that I have on films. So today, well, I know last week we talked about the quote-unquote golden age of film and how I believe we've been deceived for years about what the real golden age of film is, how the 1920s to the 1960s should be respected as the historical beginning of film, but how really it's the 1965 to 1985 era where we, as America, produced the best products we can, the best films that we can, the highest form of art that we can, and mostly for the fact that that's when we became free thinkers. And I resorted to a Roger Ebert quote in which he talks about where that's when directors had freedom. So that was episode 1. If you didn't hear it, give it a listen. It's we're now on iTunes. Just type in Better Knows Best or type in my name, Anthony Trombetta, and it'll come up. Today we're going to talk about a few things. Usually I'm planning on doing a show every Wednesday and Sunday, but since I'm going to Boston for this weekend, I figured I'd do a show now. And also I wanted to do a show now because we have an important movie to talk about, and that's Gravity, which I was able to see last night in IMAX, and we'll talk about that a little bit later. I also want to start the show with movies that I really recommend very, very highly for you to maybe check out during the week if you have a chance, and you're, you know, if you have Netflix. I'm going to try to have at least one movie that's on Netflix available, and another movie that I just feel is good. So I'm kind of going, you know, I want to try to recommend as many movies as possible. So today's two movies, one is an independent movie and one is a Spielberg movie. So you can see that, you know, one's kind of got a much, much higher budget. The first one is called The Babysitters. It's an independent movie. It's got John Leguizamo and this great actress. Her name's Catherine Waterston. It's about this girl. She's got kind of like an OCD, and she's she's in high school, and she decides in order to make some more money, she's going to pimp herself out, and she then becomes the pimp to some other high school girls that decide to get involved with it. And it's this great story that, you know, and John Leguizamo's, I think it's his best role that he does, and Cynthia Nixon from Sex and the City is in it as well. It's really, really good, and it's worth anybody's view. The second movie, the Spielberg movie that I'm recommending is a real underrated one, and that's why I'm recommending it. It's War Horse. It's I believe it was from 2010, I want to say, or maybe even 2011. It was nominated for Best Picture, a lot of other awards. This film is really, really good, and it's I just find it so underrated as one of Spielberg's movies. It's in my top 10 Spielberg movies, probably around number 6 or number 7. It's about this, you know, very simply, it's based on the stage play. It's about this boy and his horse, and it takes place during World War I, where this, you know, this horse that comes with this family. He's, you know, he's young and he's really not fit for the role that the family should have used him for. And they're kind of this poor class in England in during the beginning of the 20th century, but before World War I. And War Horse kind of takes you through not just that family and not just this boy, but brings you throughout different facets of the war. It brings you you stay with the German troops and you stay with the British troops, and you see a lot of different angles going on, a lot of different parts of society during that time frame. So I really, really enjoyed that film. I like the different stories. You know, usually when I think of an ensemble cast, you know, I think of movies like Crash, where, you know, there were all these different stories that kind of were connected by one thing. That's kind of what this is. But at the same time, you know why they're connected. You know, it's, you're not waiting for them to find out why they're connected. You know why they're connected, and it's this horse. So those are the two that I'm suggesting this week: War Horse and The Babysitters. Which The Babysitters is probably one of my favorite independent movies. It's really, really, really good. And War Horse, an underrated Spielberg film. So, before we get into the review of Gravity, I thought I'd share with you kind of what my process is on how I would review a film. There's nothing too complicated or too complex about the way I view and review films, but I thought I'd share kind of what goes through my head and what I use to kind of develop my opinion on how a film was. Usually I have a system of three categories. Now, generally I do a scale of 1 to 10. You know, a lot of people use the stars, or they use a rating of one, you know, percentage, or, you know, A, B, all that kind of stuff. I like to use a 1 to 10, and usually I'll use like a 5.5 or 5.7 or 8.8. You know, I use the decimals in there as well. But what I consider is three categories, and that's story, storytelling, and escapism. Now, for story, you're dealing with the general ideas of a narrative structure. Now, I'm not going to bore you with all that kind of stuff, you know, the three-act structure and, you know, building the conflict resolution, all that kind of stuff. But generally with story, what you're looking for is a good script, good dialogue, good plot, good characters. Those are some of the things that you really, really have to look out for. How are the characters? Not the actors. Don't focus on the actors yet. That's going to be next. And those two will combine together. But start with the actual characters. You know, how was the depth of the characters, and how was their progression through the story? The plot, you know, that's very simple. Was it understandable? Was it too far-fetched? Did everything make sense at the end of the movie? These are all things that you have to kind of keep in mind. So plot, characters, script, you know, the script is so important for a lot of people in order to even sign on for a movie. The next is storytelling, and storytelling is really the job of the director. You know, that's what directors are. They're storytellers. And within the storytelling category, there's kind of subgroups, and one of those would be editing, and another one would be lighting, sound, soundtrack. Actors is a huge part of the storytelling process. Were these actors good? Were they believable? Did they work for the role? Were they wrong for the role? How were they? All that kind of stuff. You know, that has to be in the storytelling process too. So you have your story, where you're breaking down the narrative structure of the plot itself and of the story itself. And then you're talking about storytelling. How was the film made? The process in which the film was made. All of these elements. Did everything work? Were some of the angles pretty cool and interesting, or was it kind of bland and dull? Or, you know, how was the lighting throughout? Did it seem too dark to you? Did it seem too bright for you? The actors, were they overacting? Were they underacting? Were they just kind of the same person as they have been in other movies? All of these things kind of, you know, you got to take these into effect after you see a movie. The last thing is escapism, and it's important, but I don't consider it as highly as the other two. So when I finally get to actually grading a movie and forming that opinion on the movie and in putting it into a graded structure, I'd probably break it down to about 50% storytelling, 40% maybe even 35% story, and 15% escapism. And what escapism is how well you as an audience member were taken into that movie world. That's the goal of movies in general, is to have you escape, you know, to forget any problems, anything that's going on in your mind, and to escape into that movie world. And sometimes what's really beautiful is when you connect with that movie so much that what's going on in that movie is going on in your life, and you can relate. And that's one of the more beautiful times in movies. And they tend to do that in independent movies, because those have a chance to have a theme of that's self-relevant to you. So those are the three things that I always consider after I see a movie and when I form my opinion. You know, when I don't just throw out a number, I think about it. Let's think about the story, let's think about the storytelling, and let's think about the escapism. It's hard to get a 10 out of 10, but there's definitely a handful of movies that do have a 10 out of 10, that do have great story, that do have great plot, characters, plot progression, and that do have great beginnings and ends and resolutions, and, you know, those... They have great editing techniques and cinematography and directing and acting and And then escapism. They are able to fully get my attention. You know, I'm not looking at my phone during the movie, or I'm not, you know, on the internet. If I'm at home watching it, I'm not on the internet, or I'm not focusing on something else. I'm fully involved in that movie, and that's what escapism really is. So I figure I'd start the first review on a movie that I saw yesterday, and a movie that's now out in theaters, and it's Gravity. Gravity stars Sandra Bullock and George Clooney, and it's directed by Alfonso Cuarón, who did Prisoner of Azkaban, one of the third installment of the Harry Potter series, and he also did Children of Men with Clive Owen, which is a great movie, and that's also another one that I would recommend. This movie was kind of Cuarón's baby. He's been babying this for a couple of years. I believe him and his brother wrote the script, and it cost about $80 million to make. Mostly it's special effects driven. And let me start by saying, if you are going to see this movie, you should experience it in IMAX 3D. Now 3D is a very touchy topic with me. I generally don't like to see movies in 3D. Even the superhero high action movies, unless they're specifically intended to be seen at that high performance, like a movie like Gravity or like a movie like Avatar, if they are intended for the screen to be seen that way, then I say, yes, let's do it. Let's go see it. You know, movies like Titanic and anything usually Cameron makes, or Christopher Nolan makes, you know, these are colossal movies that the director has intended for his audience, for you guys to see this movie this way. But then there's these movies that are just released in 3D for the hell of it. They're generally kid movies because they'll get you to cough up some extra money. There's re-releases of movies like, you know, for instance, one of my favorite franchises of all time, the Star Wars movies, are being re-released in 3D. I don't think it's necessary. I don't think those movies were made for a 3D experience. So why should we have to go see them in that? Why are we having 3D shoved down our throat? And this kind of happens with 3D every 10 or so years, you know. 3D's been around since the 50s, believe it or not. And because you can remember a movie like Back to the Future, there's a scene where one of Biff's friends, I want to say, has 3D glasses on, and it's true. Technology has been around since the 50s or so. Every so often, you know, they say, well, how do we get more money out of our audiences? And IMAX is you know, there's definitely a lot of movies that should be seen in IMAX, but 3D can be very choppy, and I'm generally not a fan of 3D movies, mostly for the fact that I have glasses, and the double frame thing is really, really hard to do. It's hard to put glasses on top of glasses and to sit there for 2 hours. You know, they're sliding off and all that crap, but the glasses have come a long way. But I still don't buy into the 3D fad, and I haven't for a very long time. But then again, I didn't buy into Blu-ray for a very long time, and now, you know, my Blu-ray collection has been jolting. But even with Blu-ray, I won't buy a movie from the 80s or the 90s to see on Blu-ray unless they really tell me that it's been digitally remastered for a specific use for Blu-ray. You know, I'm not going to buy Teen Wolf on Blu-ray. You know, Jaws I bought on Blu-ray because it was remastered for Blu-ray. You know, some people know what they're doing, and then some people just want your money. So Gravity is a film, obviously, I said, with Sandra Bullock and George Clooney. It's this space movie, and I think it will wind up falling as one of the better space movies that we've had to experience. You need to experience this in IMAX. If you experience it any other way, you're not going to get the full intensity of the movie. The script is what really bothers me here. I think there was some really cheesy dialogue. There was what we would call Hollywood dialogue. And I think for a movie of this stature and for its real in intimate moments in space, it's so beautiful to look at. And I think that's what's really getting critics to step up their opinion on the movie is the visuals. It's 100%. You know, I escape. When I talked earlier about the three things that I consider in movies, storytelling and escapism, 100% for escapism. I was totally invested in Sandra Bullock's character and her mission in space and her journey through space. cinematography was gorgeous, and the lighting was obviously gorgeous because you could do anything with special effects, you know. I don't know what the breakdown is of how the movie was shot, and you know, I'm sure everything was done in a studio, and you know, it was the shuttles were made, and you know, and everything else was kind of green screen. I'm not really sure about that. I know obviously there's a lot of computer generated imagery involved, but whatever it was beautiful to look at, and Cuarón did a great job by bringing that to the screen. So when I look at Escapism, it knocked it out of the park, 100%. I was totally invested in it. I love this shot, and especially space. We know nothing about space as audience members, unless you are an astronaut. You know, we really don't know much except from what we've seen in the movies or what we've been told and taught over school. So that was really gorgeous, and it's also very scary. You know, it's so real to you. Everybody knows from the trailer that it's Sandra Bullock kind of drifting away in space, and it's funny because we see these movies how people are kind of lost on Earth and they have to find their way to get, you know, maybe from country to country. But imagine being lost in this vast, almost endless atmosphere, or is endless atmosphere, endless area of space. It's scary as shit. I'll tell you the truth. So that was really good. The good part for Escapism, storytelling, again, cinematography, lighting. I think the directing was very, very good on this. So storytelling even will be an uplifted percentage. I think it really hit well there. I think the acting was good. I think Clooney was kind of off, but. And his character structure, which goes to the first category that we look at, which is story. His character and the dialogue and the story were really kind of too far-fetched. You know, it's not totally far-fetched for us to believe that somebody can get lost in space. But it is far-fetched to believe that if that person is lost in space, they're not freaking out. Sandra Bullock did an incredible job. She was freaking out in the beginning. And then towards the end of the movie, she has to kind of make decisions, and she kind of goes on this, you know, here we go, let's do this. But I'm not going to spoil the end of what happens, whether she lives or dies. But so it's this journey that has to be made in space, and it's really lovely to look at. I have to say, it's one of the better visualized movies I've seen in a long time. But I do think it lost a lot of points for me when it comes to its story and its story structure and a couple of things. It wasn't hard to follow the movie; you kind of knew what was happening. But the characters, and you know, it was a very short movie. It was only about an hour 20 or hour 25. And really, how much longer can you go on in space? But we weren't able to fully invest in Sandra Bullock's character because we weren't given enough backstory. We weren't given enough time as an audience to feel an emotional connection with this character. And they kind of forced that quickly to grab your attention with her. But I think Cuarón's intention was you're going to feel connected to her when it's just her in space. When it's just her alone, you should feel connected and you should feel like you're part of this journey. Whereas usually in movies, we're built on backstories of characters that those are what make us totally invest, or we're built on the actions that they do towards the beginning of movies, or how they are, what their mindset is. We usually do that in order to fully invest in them. Clooney's dialogue was very, very cheesy. It wasn't the best I wanted to see from him. I don't think it was bad. I don't think it was bad acting. I think it was just a bad script story wise. The dialogue just didn't work for me as much as it should have. You know, there were just a lot of these Hollywood moments in the movie, and that's fine if that's what your intention were to make. But I believe that this movie was visually spectacular. It's one of the better movies I've seen in shot-wise and you know, lighting-wise and all that kind of stuff. I think it'll be the Life of Pi of this year. I didn't see Life of Pi last year, but as anybody knows, as far as visual effects, it won a lot of awards at the Academy. It won even Best Director by Ang Lee. So I think it's going to be the Life of Pi of this year, and it will get the Academy's attention, certainly. The critics are raving about it. I think Sandra Bullock was phenomenal in it. I don't know if there's a Best Actress nominee in the future. I think there's a lot of strong performances coming up in the fall, But she might be there. She might be one of them. Especially, you know, this kind of one-person journey movie where she's really the biggest and real only star. I mean, Clooney's in there for a little bit, but so she might get the attention of the Academy for Best Actress nod. So I would say, considering everything, I'm looking at Gravity being around at 8.3. I think it nailed it on escapism. I think most of the storytelling was firing on all cylinders, but where it lacked was the story. I think the characters were interesting, but we didn't have enough time to invest in the characters. I think the plot was interesting, but we didn't have time to really invest in the plot. You know, it was a very quick kind of journey. So I would say it's about an 8.3 for me. And if it wasn't as beautifully made with the story, with the script and the dialogue and everything, if it wasn't as beautifully made, it would have been a lot lower. It would have probably lose around, you know, around 2 full points and maybe be in the sixes. But since it was so amazingly shot, and again, it needs to be experienced in IMAX in order for you to fully grasp it, but then it'll get an 8.3 for me from my review. Now, the next thing that I want to talk about is something that's really, really important in movies, and they kind of go hand in hand, and that's music. Soundtracks and scores are so crucial to any movie that's made, unless you're doing some kind of experimental film where you don't have any music whatsoever. I can't think of one of my favorite movies, you know, even in my top 10, that don't have a good score or a good, you know, a really, really solid soundtrack. And whether it be 2 hours of instrumental soundtrack that help fit the right scenes and fit the right environments, or whether it be a movie that has great great regular music, you know, the placement of, let's say, an AC/DC song or you know, any artist, a lyrical song, whether it be that any of those, it can go such a long way in the development of a movie. You know, that's why I love Pulp Fiction so much, and that's why I love Reservoir Dogs or anything that Tarantino makes, because of his placement of music, and especially lyrical music in his movies. It's really, really amazing how well he does it. How you can say, well, that song's not going to fit in there, and meanwhile, it does. It works. But then you think about the instrumental side of things, and you kind of, you know, my hero in that world of scores and composers is John Williams. You know, he's basically the music of the movies with the amount of scores that he's done to films. So he's extremely important. He's won dozens of Oscars. I don't even know him. I know he's been nominated for a lot. I think he's maybe won about 5 or 6. I'm not sure. But, you know, think of E.T. and Jaws and anything Spielberg is anything John Williams. And they kind of go hand in hand. You know, even he's done Star Wars. And you know, this music in the movies goes hand in hand. It's something that you can really remember from that film is its soundtrack. One of the newer movies that I love the score for is which is now my second favorite movie of all time, which is Drive. Drive has this great, gripping, raw and gritty score by Cliff Martinez, and it's really, really there's so many moments where something is so subtle as, you know, a guitar string being strummed, or anything can be so important for that scene. Think of a horror movie. Take Halloween, for instance, with Michael Myers. Now take that Halloween classic theme music, dun, 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 take that out of the movie, or take the whole score out of the movie and watch the movie. It's not as interesting as it is. The tension isn't built as much as it should. Music and scores go such a long way, and you know, there's so many scores that I admire and love so much, especially, you know, Drive with Cliff Martinez, this raw and gritty and gripping soundtrack. And there's also electronic music that I never thought I would like, you know. There's a couple of songs, one of them's called The Real Hero, that's like in my top 40 songs of all time now because I love it so much. And other electronic kind of alternative, even experimental music that's in this movie along with the score that works so well for that. And that goes such a long way for me, is having a good score. And there can be bad scores, you know. There can be times where even if the movie's going very well. The music just doesn't fit right. So you gotta watch out for them. You kind of really have to open your ears for that part. You know, usually for movies, you're having both open. You have to open up your ears a little bit more and really hear, you know, what's going around in that situation. Is the music being built up the right way? So, like I said about Halloween, take the music out, and what do you have? You have just this guy in a Captain Kirk mask running around killing people. Is it scary? Maybe. But how much more scary does it become with the influence and with the addition of a beautiful soundtrack? I want to wrap the show up today by bidding farewell to a show that ended about 6 days ago, on its 62nd episode on AMC, and that's Breaking Bad, starring Bryan Cranston and created by Vince Gilligan. This show, over the past few years, has become kind of a pop culture phenomenon. It's crazy how it is, and that's why I love that something so good, you know, that maybe to people when they hear that a chemistry teacher who has cancer is cooking meth, maybe that is not the first thing that comes to mind when people think about what's popular in pop culture, but somehow, because of how good and great this show was, and because of how well acted it was, it managed to catch on, and partly in fact because of Netflix and their streaming of it, but it managed to catch on to audiences and really make them invest in these characters, especially the character of Walter White, played by Bryan Cranston. What I like about the pop culture side of it is that AMC went ahead and did what they have to do as a network to promote the show, and got the viewers, and wound up turning out 10 million viewers on the last episode. But what I like is that it didn't become pop culture-y when you watch the show. You know, when you watch the show, all of that was aside, and it wasn't a Hollywood show. It was a show that Vince Gilligan created, where he brushed aside anything that he was supposed to do. Anything that a show person is supposed to do, and how you're supposed to write this episode, and how this is supposed to be in this Hollywood kind of idea, he pushed aside and he shot his show. Yes, he killed a kid in it. Yes, this guy had cancer through it and did these horrible acts and things. And it was gritty and raw, and it was gripping, and emotionally it connected with so many audiences. And that's why I really applaud this show, is because of the attention to detail it has. It's beautiful acting. Bryan Cranston has basically on top of the world now, because he literally has a choice at anything he can do. He can pick any movie to star in, or any TV show to star in. And this was really the thing that launched a man's career that should have been launched a long time ago, because we've seen his talent now as an actor. What I also admire about the show is the ability to make you, the ability to pour out any type of emotion that you have, laughing, crying, sorrow, hatred. You can do it all here. Also, regarding the characters, you know, Skyler White was so hated for the first four, even for a lot of the fifth season, because of the way that she would stand up for herself against her husband, and because of some of the things like that she did, like having an affair with Ted, or you know, she would smoke while she was pregnant. You hated the character, but what I love is that you never hated. You never said, "I hate Anna Gunn, who plays Skyler." You always said, "I hate the character." And that goes such a long way to show how well Anna Gunn acted as that role. And also how well Vince Gilligan made that role. And the depth of that character, it's so important. And it's a kudos to both of them for that. Because the ability to have so many people hate you as a character, you should be a pat on your back as an actor. So, yes, of course, Bryan Cranston's character, who is hated and loved throughout all 62 episodes. Some people love him at the end, some people hate him at the end. And that's obviously the brilliant job that Bryan Cranston did. And he'll forever be known as a character of Walter White who graced TV as probably the best character ever to be created on television. But I also, when you think about this show really deeply, it's the fact of Anna Gunn's character, who was really, really important and an integral part of it, and It's just something that's been on my mind for a long time. The fact that everybody says that what they used to say or whatever, however your feelings on Skylar were on the last episode is up to you. But how people would say, "Oh, I hate Skylar," and I was so happy that people were saying that. And I was also, they weren't saying that they hated her because of her acting. They hated her because of her character. That's great. I really, really love when people would say that. So kudos to everybody on that show. They did an amazing job. Jesse is another person. I think Jesse, in a way, was the biggest connection that the audience can have with a character. You felt like he didn't have a choice in a matter of in almost anything that he did, and his final release, his final freedom, was so glorifying as an audience to see. So I think he was the most personal character, the most personal person that you can relate to as a character. It's so hard to relate to Walt, because of all of these positions that he is in, as a kind of lower middle income, even probably, I guess, yeah, lower middle income matriarch of the family, and a person now who has cancer, and a person who turns to this horrible life, and then who later on, winds up that he kind of enjoys this life. He wants this life. So it was a really beautiful show, and almost every episode is gripping and has amazing attention to detail and has great character development. There's so much that I can say about a show like Breaking Bad. So it ended last week, and I applaud its 5-year, 62 episode run, and I can't wait to see what Vince Gilligan and the rest of the cast, what they do, especially Bryan Cranston. And look out for Anna Gunn, because like I said, it's really great when people say that about her character. I find it great, and I'm so happy she won the Emmy for it, because it was well deserved. There's going to be basically probably a couple of episodes in the future that'll be just dedicated to Breaking Bad. I'm almost sure of it. And a lot more episodes about TV and stuff. But on today's episode, I'm glad that I was able to get through kind of what my process is in reviewing movies, and how I finally formulate my opinion and how I grade movies. I was happy to talk about some 3D stuff. Gravity, see it in IMAX if you can, but definitely see the movie. It's definitely worth the view. Definitely the viewing part, especially. I feel like you could almost watch that movie with the sound off. I don't know. I'm still making an opinion about it, but I do know that it deserves a pretty high grade, especially for its theatrics in cinematography and visual effects. And we also got to talk a little about Breaking Bad, which again, like I said, is going to probably have its own episodes dedicated to it, probably with a couple of other people involved. But that's it for this week. I'm headed up to Boston tomorrow to hopefully meet Bryan Cranston. It's exciting. Maybe if I can get the boys together, we'll sit for 20 minutes and talk movies and stuff, and maybe have that as one of the episodes. But for right now, I'll see you guys next Wednesday. We're on iTunes, we're on Podomatic.com. I'm trying to get on fansandgeeks.com, which is a website that I've started a little while ago. Thank you, enjoy your weekend, and remember, keep watching the movies.